The date is May 31st, 1996, and we're watching Dragonheart. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Draco to my Bowen.
Okay, just hold on. I need to harness my inner Sean Connery.
Oh, maybe hello. I should have been Draco then.
Hello,
Sean,
I'm Colin Stewart.
Colin Stewart.
This is Colin Stewart with you. I used to like this one. No, I lost it. No good.
Yeah, no. Oh, well. You tried.
I did.
So this week we're looking back at May 1996, when the movies in theaters were Spy Hard, Mission Impossible, Heaven's Prisoners, Episode 55 Subject, Twister, and of course our movie for today, Dragonheart, which earned $115.26 million on a $57 million budget. So it made money, doubled its budget.
Well, I mean, it was nominated for an Academy Award, so, I mean, no big deal.
Well, I missed that one. For what?
For visual effects.
Oh, yeah. I think deservedly so, yeah.
Yeah. But, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want to find yourself in the dragon's flame of spoilers, then hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Some dragon's flaming snots.
yeah that was so interesting.
Yeah. So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, okay, I only found one, but there's an asterisk there, so I'll get to that. The tagline I found everywhere. Oh boy. You will believe.
A man can fly. No,
a duck can talk. I mean, we've already talked about that tagline a few times. Worst tagline I can think of for this movie is you will believe.
Yeah, it really has nothing to do with the film. It's more like you will believe in what?
Yeah, it's generic. It's the Dollar Tree version of a tagline, you know, like it's, so I wasn't happy with that. I mean, you know, you think back to our first, I don't know, dozen or two dozen episodes where I would only settle with one tagline, but I wasn't satisfied with this one. So I went digging. I had to dig hard for this, but I found one that I found on one poster, and that's honor before fear.
Okay.
So still not satisfied, I went digging even harder, and I found a Spanish poster and put it through the old Google Translate. So the third one that I have, this is why I had an asterisk at the beginning. So the third tagline, honor above all. And that's from the Spanish translation.
I feel like that's the best one and has, like, actually rings true to the theme of the movie.
Yeah. So because sure. I thought You Will Believe was such a shitty tagline, I found us honor above all. But they're all terrible taglines and don't describe this movie. So let's go to call it and do a 60-second synopsis.
I think I went too hard in the synopsis, but here we go. This is definitely going to be longer than 60 seconds. Bowen, a knight, trains Einan, a prince, in the knightly ways of honor and swordplay, but fails to recognize or acknowledge that the prince is an insufferable shit. During their training session, they are called to come see Einan's father, the king, who is also a shit, finish off a group of peasant rebels. When the king's hubris leads to him getting ambushed and killed, Einan goes to retrieve the crown and winds up getting impaled after being knocked over by a falling peasant girl. In order to save her son, the queen takes him to a dragon who gives the shit half his heart if he swears to be a good man. I thought dragons were wise, like owls. With his apprentice saved, Bowen swears his loyalty to the dragon, but a few days or maybe weeks later, when Einan is being shittier than ever, he assumes the dragon bewitched him and swears to spend the rest of his life hunting dragons. 12 years later, Bowen has killed all the dragons except one, who he ends up entering into a business arrangement with after they reach a stalemate in their attempts to kill each other. Even though this dragon is not his pet, Bowen names him Draco. Meanwhile, Aenyn, now king, is still a shithead and has repeated run-ins with the fallen girl, Kara, who seeks revenge on him for killing her father. After Aenyn captures her, the queen frees Kara and she goes to meet up with Bowen and Draco and tries to convince them to join in the fight against Aenyn. After coming face-to-face with Aenyn, Draco reveals he is the dragon who shares his heart. Bowen reluctantly agrees to join Kara's cause, and they train the villagers into an army to take on the king. During the battle, they discover Draco and Aenyn's link is much deeper, and the only way to kill the shithead king is to kill the benevolent dragon. There you go.
Nice. That wasn't as long as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought when I looked at it in the notes app, it was like 4 pages, and I was like, "Oh, this seems like it's going to take a while," but you know, you make up for it.
Yeah. So this is one of those movies that you said I want to kick off the new year with one that I've seen. So you brought me Dragonheart, and I said, "Okay, sure, why not? I've never seen Dragonheart." So there we go. That's basically my history with Dragonheart. I am aware of it. I have seen it on the shelves. I've never watched it. Because, I mean, I know I asked you, is that the one where Sean Connery is the dragon? And you said, yeah. And it has Dennis Quaid. And I'm like, yeah, I knew that too. Okay, so I, like, surface level knowledge of this movie. So I had never seen this movie. Colin, why did you want to do Dragonheart? What's your history?
Well, I just remember, like, loving this movie when I was younger. My mom, like, brought it home one day on VHS. That's how, like, I basically found all movies from the age of, I don't know, probably, like, 5 to 10. Like, I never went to movie theaters. My mom would just occasionally show up at home with a new movie she bought. And if it looked like something I'd be into, I'd watch it. And this was one of those movies, like, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the show, but I'm very much, when it comes to genres and, like, fantasy and science fiction and that kind of thing, I much prefer, like, fantasy, swords, shields, castles to, like, spaceships and that kind of stuff.
Lasers.
Yeah.
Freaking lasers.
Yeah. And I remember kind of feeling like this movie was on the heels of Jurassic Park a little bit. And part of me, like, with the whole I Will Believe tagline makes me think, like, you know, in a Game of Thrones world nowadays, we just take for granted, like, the idea of seeing, like, realistic-looking dragons on the screen and that kind of thing. But if I actually think back, Dragonheart might be the first time I ever saw a flesh-looking, like, CGI-generated dragon in a movie.
Yeah, they did good.
And so I think, because Reign of Fire was after this, so yeah, I think for that reason alone, I probably really like this movie. And it's just always, I haven't watched it before this in a very, very long time. But it's just always been one of those movies that kind of like sits in the back of my brain, you know, where you're just like, oh yeah, I remember liking that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, with like dragons, I mean, that's me in Neverending Story, you know, with Falcor. I mean, that, yeah, I can understand the fondness. I'm not much of the fantasy guy and more of the lasers and
Yeah, so, I think like Star Wars is about as far as I go into space.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason that is because it's space knights. Like I could never get into Star Trek. Like not for the life of me. I could not. I could sit and watch a movie maybe, but to like watch, like, I've never been one of those guys who's like super into this TV show.
Yeah, I did go through a book phase, right? Like, I'm not Game of Thrones, and it's funny because my girlfriend watched this with me, and she has binged all of Game of Thrones. So she's like, the dragons are shockingly similar, is what her comment was. But I did go through a phase in elementary school where my buddies and I were into the Dragon Riders of Pern series, which is an Anne McCaffrey book series. And so it really confused me because when I was going through the trivia of this particular movie, there was a lot of stuff that kept referring to the novelization. Like, they didn't refer to the book, but they were referring to how this differs from the novelization. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, but a novelization is supposed to follow the plot of the movie, so do they mean book? So I finally Googled it, and I found out that there is a book called Dragonheart by Todd McCaffrey, which carries on this Dragon Riders of Pern. That's Anne McCaffrey's son. And it carries on this series, and he has a book in the series called Dragonheart. Not the same fucking book.
Okay.
So it literally is. There is a novelization, but for some reason they changed plot points in the novelization. I didn't bother copying any of them down because I'm like, fuck you and your novelization. No, I don't care how it differs. Go read the book. I'm not a book podcast. I'm a movie podcast.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I got this movie from the library, and I knew that there was at least one sequel. But I didn't realize that there's like five.
Five, yeah.
And
yeah,
I think four
latest was from like 2020.
Yeah, I think four
Elena
of them
Bonham
are...
With Elena Bonham Carter.
Oh, wow. I think four of them are prequels. But I was looking at, like, I think Draco has to be one of the most, like, well-cast characters in film because, you know, Sean Connery voices him in this one. And then in two of the other ones, I think in the third one, he's voiced by Sir Patrick Stewart. And then in one of the other ones, he's voiced by Ben Kingsley.
Oh, wow. Wow. It's a prestigious position to be this dragon.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into Dragonheart, directed by Rob Cohen, who we talked about in The Fast and the Furious. He's the director of that one. And Triple X, stuff like that. Kenneth Branagh and Richard Donner were both attached to this movie at one point, though.
Hmm.
So those could have been, I don't know, Richard Donner, there would have been a lot more helicopter shots, I think. swooping shots. The dragon is shown a lot more from the ground than he probably would be in a Richard Donner movie in this movie. You know, like, I don't know.
I think, in a Richard Donner movie, you would have a lot more shots from the dragon's point of view.
Yeah, exactly. It's produced by Rafaela De Laurentiis, and it's written by... his middle name is R-E-A-D, so I don't know whether it's Patrick Reed Johnson, which, great name if you're a writer, or if it's Patrick Red Johnson, which sounds more badass. But so, that's one of the writers. The other one is Charles Edward Page. Both of them sounding like serial killers because they're using their full names. But we open this movie on shots of castles in a British countryside, or technically a Slovakia countryside. And we see the shithead prince that Colin was talking about in his 60-second synopsis. I found that this prince reminded me of the... have you seen Holy Grail? Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I have, but I don't remember it well. I've only seen it like once.
Okay, just because there's a snooty prince in that one where he's just playing it totally for comedy. But like this kid, like he just totally reminded me of that same kind of character where it's like, is this supposed to be funny? Because I know that the general plot of this movie is that they end up becoming shysters and and pulling this grift all across the countryside working together. But I didn't know whether he was playing it for comedy here or not, because it's like, I don't know. I just couldn't take him seriously as the kid.
Yeah. I wasn't like, I don't know how you, if you let me know what you think about this, but almost from the get-go, as soon as they started talking, this movie gave me mad, like, Robin Hood. Prince of Thieves vibes.
Yes.
I was like, this has the same spirit. And even what I was going to point out was, like, the way that Dennis Quaid cannot hold an accent reminds me so much of Kevin Costner.
Is he doing an Irish accent at points? Because the first the first time I really noticed it, I thought it was because he was mocking Kara. That's what I thought it was.
No, because in this first scene, it's there, and then it goes away really fast, and then like kind of comes in a little bit when he's with Draco the first time, and then it goes in and out all like all the time where I'm like,
yeah, see,
you could probably look like rewatch the movie and figure out what scenes, how, like which scenes were shot in what order based on his accent.
Yeah. The longer he was around the extras and learning the accent, the better it was getting. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because Liam Neeson was originally cast.
Oh, okay. Oh, that would have been really interesting.
But the studio didn't believe, ironically enough, that he could play a convincing action hero.
Wow.
You know, Mr. Taken, yeah. Mr., you know, Mr. Star Wars, Mr., you know, all these different things, Mr. Rob Roy. And the studio also wanted Robin Williams, but he refused because he wanted to play Draco.
I'm just imagining the genie as like the dragon.
Right? Yeah. Right?
Hey, man, yeah. What you doing?
And so, I mean, from there, it went through like the usual list of suspects. We have Gabriel Byrne, Pierce Brosnan, Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Patrick Swayze, and then Christopher Reeve got attached to the part and then had his accident before they could get production running. It sounds like production was a nightmare on this, and this was one that they were trying to get off the ground for years and years and years. So, yeah, they had Christopher Reeve attached, and then, yeah, he got paralyzed, and so fell into Dennis Quaid's lap. And, I love Dennis Quaid, but I don't think this is the right role for him. And I'm surprised that Kevin Costner is not on that list. Kevin Bacon is, but not Kevin Costner.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Dennis Quaid's career to know whether, like, I do like him in this movie, but I feel like he alone almost sets the tone for it to be a comedy. Like, any other one of those actors, I feel like it could completely change the tone of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But I get the sense that Dennis Quaid is a more comedic guy.
He does a little bit of everything. I mean, he played Jerry Lee Lewis in Great Balls of Fire. But Inner Space is a comedy. Frequency is kind of a drama, like a nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, he's always just there. Like, I like him, but he's just always, like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to say about Dennis Quaid. I don't dislike Dennis Quaid, but I don't think, damn,
you don't love him.
The next Dennis Quaid movie is coming out. I got to see that, right? He's never my deciding reason to watch a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like I said, I think he's a little bit, like, this is basically, like, kind of the only movie
I can really
think of him in.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, like, with the prince, with Einan, when I remember watching the movie when I was younger and not really picking up, like, how he's just bad from the start.
Yeah.
I feel like when I watched it when I was younger, I kind of thought, like, maybe he was, like, a good guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he was okay. But, yeah, watching it this go around, I was like, man, this character, I don't want to keep, like, crossing over with Game of Thrones, but he definitely gives me Joffrey, like, Joffrey vibes.
Is Joffrey the one that dies in the first season by getting the gold poured on his head or whatever?
No, that's Viserys. Joffrey is, like, the kid who becomes the king, and he's king for, like, a little bit. Like, he's for a couple seasons at least, I think.
Okay. Well, one thing I will say about this kid is, having Professor Lupin as the older version of him, it's brilliant casting.
That's who that guy is. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's David Thewlis.
Yeah, I was looking at his face the whole movie being like, where do I know you from, Lupin? There you go. Got it.
Yeah, so we've got Professor Lupin, we've got Lucius Malfoy, because his sidekick is Lucius Malfoy. That's Felton. Which I also love that his name is Felton, because he's the dad of Tom Felton in Harry Potter, and the dragon's name is Draco. It's like, what is going on? There was one scene at one point where, as king, Einan is like, he ends up, like, smashing Felton's head down on the thing. And I just thought, man, it was interesting to see kind of the role reversal of these characters I've seen on screen, you know, in another franchise.
We also got Shao Kahn.
Yes.
Brian something or other. I can't remember what his
last
Brian
Thompson.
Name is,
yeah. As Thompson. Brock. Yeah. Our Mortal Kombat.
That guy has made appearances in a surprising amount of movies that we've watched.
Yeah.
Like just
Three Amigos. And there were a couple others. Yeah. He's, we should be tracking him as much as I am with Mary Ellen Trainor. Like,
the character actors.
Yeah. So we've got this big village raid happening and a bunch of pillaging, and it's 984 AD, and the credits are still fucking going. Like, they get right into this movie in a hurry. I was kind of surprised by that, but it left me a little breathless. Like, I didn't quite... It took me a while to catch up in this movie, I have to say.
Yeah. I don't know. The plot of this movie was not as... There wasn't a lot as much depth, I guess, as I remember feeling like there was when I was a kid.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I'm watching this movie, and there are moments that I love. Like when they start their grift, I thought, "Oh my god, that's such a fun idea for this movie." These guys going from town to town and getting money from people. But the prince stuff or the king stuff is taken so seriously that it takes you out of it. Like with Robin Hood, it's like Robin Hood was still having fun. And then Alan Rickman was doing this cartoony, over the top, weird, hilarious evil compared to like this guy was actually pretty scary at times. But, you know, it's just there's these two different tones going on. But I really loved the... You know, like when he's chasing the dragons and he shoots his bolo like it's a James Bond vehicle to catch him, right? He's got gadgets on his horse. And I'm like, okay, this is the movie that I think I want to see. And they didn't do enough of that. And so, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say my main critique that I was left with in this movie is Bowen's ideology, motivation, whatever, it changes on a dime. So fast, it's not feasible to me that you're this knight of the realm and full of honor and all this, and you don't, like I said in my 6 second synopsis, you don't see that this kid is just like destined to be a raging asshole. Like the idea that after he's healed he would think he's been bewitched is like, you're on drugs, man, like you're high. And then, you know, to go from, oh, you have my sword, blah, blah, to no, now I curse you and I'm going to spend the rest of my days hunting you. Mm-hmm. And then he seemingly has done that for 12 years to then finally he's got like the last dragon and he's just going to give, like, he's just, it's not worth it anymore. Like, let's just be friends.
Yeah. The movie I want to see is those 12 years.
Yeah.
That's the movie I want to see, you know, like, you know, take some of it off of the grift. As much fun as that is, or take some of the king's story away, because whatever. But yeah, it's, I want to see him hunting dragons. I want to see him, you know, like the Highlander going around chopping people's heads off, you know?
Yeah. I felt, even though I liked her, that Kara's story was virtually useless. Like you could have taken all that out. Well, you could have basically just done exactly what Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, does with Prince John and just kind of show him being an asshole to the people at large.
Yeah.
And how far he's fallen.
Yeah. I mean, with her, it's... Yeah. First of all, it's, okay, how much more obvious can they make it that we need to remember who this girl is? With her flaming red hair and, you know, like everything like that. Like, and she's like the only woman, or at least the only attractive woman in the entire movie. You know, it's like, yeah, I think the only other woman we've seen at this point is the queen.
Yeah.
Who I guess once the king dies, it goes to the son instead of the queen. So, okay. No, I guess that makes sense. Never mind. That's how the British royal family works. I should know this. I'm Canadian.
And there's a point, too, where they kind of... I don't know, when he's showing her how to use the axe, I feel like maybe we're supposed to think there's some sparks happening between Bowen and Kara. But I'm like, wouldn't he be like 25, 30? I mean, not that it matters, I guess, but
yeah,
I feel like there's a considerable age gap there.
There's a little bit of a gap going on there. But we see Kara, and because we see Kara, that ends up causing his death. Like, she ends up being kind of this death omen throughout the movie because she's trying to assassinate him later and everything like that. Whenever Kara shows up, shit's going to go down, at least for the first little while in this movie. And he ends up impaling himself, and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, at this point, I didn't even really understand who this prince was, and I'm like, oh, okay, so is it going to become a revenge movie somehow, or what's this all about? Like, I was still trying to catch up.
Yeah, it is very strange, because it's like, he's not a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, I don't know, there's just something weird about, like, why they would even want to save Aynin.
Yeah, because he's royalty. He's
just
royal
because
blood.
He's royalty, I guess, but
yeah, that's got to be it, 100%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I don't even really understand, like, this is the other part where I was behind. I didn't even really understand why they were attacking this village in the first place. Like, these people were just going about their lives, so why, like, was there some taxing going on or something? Like, I don't know, like, was I missing lines in this...
Well, they refer to them as, like, rebels. Like, to me, it sounds like there's, from what I gathered anyways, there's some sort of, like, peasant revolt happening. And so the king is basically, like, he wages these, like, battles, I suppose.
Pillaging raids.
To kind of, like, put people in their place. And,
yeah.
And then, I mean, based on, like, what Aynin does afterwards with, like, getting all these people, like, kind of, it's almost like turns them into slaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, because they take him to heal him with the dragon, and I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, so he's not dead. Okay, so they take him to this mysterious cave. And then I think they did the smartest thing that they could have done back in 1990, whatever, whenever this movie came out. Was it 96, was it?
Mm-hmm.
They decided to keep the dragon out of it for the first part of it. While he's performing this delicate heart surgery to Aynin, you know, they decided to, okay, let's cover up as much of this CGI as possible by, you know, using weird lighting and not showing him. Keeping him as just this omnipresent voice in the dark.
They learned from Jurassic Park. You know, you can't just give it all away all at once. You gotta build the suspense.
That's right. You sure do. But I still didn't quite know what was going on. And so it's like, oh, okay. So he healed him, but I didn't really even realize that he had given him half his heart. Like, again, I don't know whether I was just not hearing certain lines or something, or just not putting the pieces together. I don't know.
This is another thing. I remember that whole thing being more involved, but I, like, when I was watched it as a kid, but I agree with you, watching it as an adult, it's kind of just like, this, the whole first, I don't know, 30 minutes of this movie is just, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, 12 years later, let's go.
It jumps around weird. Okay, that's, it wasn't just me. It does jump around weird. Okay. Because then all of a sudden we're with the new king, because his dad died, and he wants to rebuild the ruins of the castle and, you know, turns everybody into slaves. That's quite the prisoner handcuff, neck cuff contraption that they have going. Like, they're like gallows, but, or not gallows, whatever they're called, the blocks, the stocks.
Yeah.
But they're joining one prisoner to another. Like, I thought those were pretty cool. And I thought, are those real? I don't know if those are real, but those are pretty cool.
Yeah, this would not be fun. It took me a while, because I thought for a second, like, yeah, normally you're used to seeing them with, like, hand hole, neck hole, hand hole. But the one scene, it looked like this guy had, like, his neck in and then two hands on one side. And I was just thought, man, that would be uncomfortable. But then I realized it was the other guy's hand.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, 12 years later, we cut to a guy riding a donkey and writing poetry. And the dragon flies by, and Bowen is chasing after it. Again, I wish I could have seen more of the 12 years, because this particular dragon hunt, you don't get to see much of. Like, it's all kind of done from the donkey guy's perspective. And I'm like, well, I want to see this fight. Like, I wanted to see more of dragons.
Yeah, like the actual dragon killing happens off stage left. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You don't get to see it.
Like, do you think that's the 1996 of it all, where it's just like, ugh, we better not push our luck with these effects?
Well, I think it's that, and I also think it's like, how much did it cost? Like, in 1996, how much would it have cost every time you had wanted to, like, put one of those dragons on screen and make it look good? Yeah. And plus, like, you can even see in the fight with Draco, like, it's a mix of CGI and then, like, practical effects for the action. And I don't know if that would have been as streamlined as it probably is now back then.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Well, I mean, they did almost entirely CGI for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The him in the mouth is one of the scenes that's definitely a practical effect. And the hand on him, pinning him to the ground, is also a practical effect. Those are the only parts of a full-size dragon that they built. Other stuff they had miniature. Like, there's some forced perspective stuff that they did with a model dragon. But yeah, mm-hmm. they did rely mostly on CGI for this.
Yeah. I just mean, like timing. Like there's the scene where, like, when they're fighting and you have, like, the tail come across the screen and, like, smash through, like, a tree.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then you have to time, like, the explosion or whatever. That right, you're right, doing. Right, like, right. Yeah, I just feel like in 96 that probably took some doing. That.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah.
I did find it really odd that Draco blows fire through his nose and not his mouth.
Yeah.
I don't know. It never occurred to me before that would be, like, I'm so used to seeing the mouth fire-breathing, mouth-breathing dragons.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also don't quite understand why he can't use his fire later on in the movie when they're chaining him down. Right, yeah, he's trying to fight them off. Why hasn't he blown a couple fireballs? Like, he's not a mouth-breathing dragon. They have his face chained down, but yeah.
Yeah, can you just snort like a little, like just a little ball?
Yeah, yeah. Throw a little, Bowser fireball at them. You know, burn mm-hmm. Mario's ass. Yeah. So we do find out, though, how quickly this king has become, like, even more of an asshole than ever before, as he decides to kill the only woman in this movie's blind, sick father. What an asshole. But I'm not huge on his bow and arrow skills. He's holding his bow and arrow in a very weird way. Like, did you ever have one of those suction cup arrow sets when you were a kid? Like, where you can't quite, you know, like, you can only pull it back part way. Like, he was not pulling that back in a way that makes me believe that
he's a real archer.
This guy is dead. Yeah, or a real archer, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it wasn't, like, a full draw. It was, like, a patoo, patoo, like
that. Yeah, yeah, there's not enough velocity. Oh. Like, I'm surprised that arrow made its way off screen. That's how wimpy that was, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering, like, what... In the past, it seemed like Bowen saved Kara's dad from getting his eyes burned out. But mm-hmm. then he ended up going blind anyway. That seems... I don't know. Or maybe he just got caught again later and got blinded. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, no, those were, like... Those were foggy eyes. Those were cataracts. That was natural.
Yeah. That was all natural.
Yeah. So he just bought him a little extra time. That's all he did. Yeah.
You know, I guess.
So at one point here, we end up having Gilbert, the priest / writer, just kind of start integrating his way into Bowen's life. Like, Bowen just collects people. That's all he manages to do. Like, this guy wants to write a story about his dragon slaying, and I don't know how he keeps finding Bowen on his donkey. That thing's not keeping up with the horse. Like, Bowen's going miles and miles. This guy's some master tracker or something.
The donkey is a sturdy animal. You know, it can just slow and steady wins the race or something like that.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Just sturdy. When he catches up with him, that's when we get the standoff in Draco's mouth. I like that moment. I thought that was a really fun scene. And then this is where the movie turned fun for a while. From hunting Draco to this standoff in his mouth. Like, you know, and the part where he reaches down and pulls something out of his teeth and it's someone's arm. You know, like it's someone he knows. Yeah, someone he knows. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it when they're like, I can't remember, but they just keep going back and forth of like, if you stab me, then I'll bite you. If you bite me, then I'll stab you. And just like, I mean, I kind of have to feel like Draco had the advantage. I don't know that Bowen's sword was. It seemed like his sword was more like in the snout. Like, I feel like if Draco bit down, the sword might have just like gone through like the bill of his mouth, but not necessarily into his brain.
Yeah. But is that a risk you want to take, you know?
I mean, it would still be pretty painful, I feel like. I don't know.
That too, yeah. Yeah.
I bit my tongue today. We all know how painful it is when you get, like, cuts in your mouth and stuff.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's already cutting up the roof of his mouth to keep the point there as a constant reminder. Yeah. He's going to be licking that for the next couple of weeks.
But this is where, I guess, clearly this shows that dragons only in this world only breathe fire through their nose.
Yeah, because he feels like it's safe enough to get into his mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they end up making a deal, though. I like that idea, too. And I like how the dragon with it is, you know, hey, I'm going to let you up. If you kill me, then you kill me. But, you know, I'm going to let you up here. But they make this deal. Because it's like, he's the last dragon, he slays dragons, so we have to pretend like I'm a million different dragons just so that you can still make money and I get to live. How have neither of them recognized each other at this point? Like, this is the dragon that he swore to kill. Now, I know he was in shadows a lot in the first, but Sir Sean Connery has a very distinct voice.
I was going to say, that's like, they have that whole conversation about Bowen basically saying, like, he was basically trying to kill all the dragons and so he could get to this one.
Yeah.
And then I'm just thinking, like, even by process of elimination, would you not think this guy says he's the last dragon? To your knowledge, you have not encountered the dragon that you want to kill so bad.
He's never come out and said, are you him? Like, like, that never comes out of his mouth once. So, are you him? You know, like you're asking, are you a cop? You know?
Yeah. But you are right. Like, yeah, sure. Maybe you didn't see him in the shadows, but you're telling me like even at the waterfall stage when you hear that voice, you're not like, sounds familiar.
Yeah, because it's echoey the same way it was the first time I heard it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you're the last dragon, and it's like, really? Like, at that point you're not like, wait a minute, you say you're the last dragon, you sound so much like him.
Do we know each other? Have we spoken before?
Have we met before? Like, you've got a lot of evidence. They chum out a bit, yeah. And then we have the king hosting his wild party with people dying, because that's entertainment in 952 AD, I guess, is... let's just bring some people over and slaughter them and humiliate them in front of me just for laughs.
That's when the jester's just not doing it for you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But then that's when Kara comes in and tries to assassinate him. And fortunately, he sees her reflection. You know, it's one of these things that he played this king so well that, like, I was so mad that he was actually good at shit. I wanted him to be fucking useless, but it's like, oh my god, damn it. He learned too much from Dennis Quaid in the beginning, because he actually manages to avoid this assassination, and he, you know, sure, he gets stabbed, but, like, there is the point where he even bests his master, you know, the student rises up and beats the teacher.
Yeah, this is definitely a character that you hate. He does his job very, very well in making you just want him dead. Like, if this was going to be one, if this ended up being one of those movies where it was like, against our better judgment, we're going to let him live because we don't kill like them, I would be like, no, you must kill this man. Like, you cannot be allowed to live.
This guy has to die. Absolutely has to. Yeah. But this is where we find out. And then finally, like, one of those puzzle pieces just clicked into place for me where, you know, he gets stabbed and the dragon reacts. And I'm like, oh, that's what was going on in the beginning. They're connected. I'm so smart. I figured this out halfway through the movie. But, like, okay, how far does their connection go? Like, does the king feel things from the dragon's? He does, right?
He does. Because
there is
a
moment, he ends up feeling something from the dragon's point of view. But
like the whole thing, like, at the end, when his mom is also like, man, you need to die, and she, like, hires dragon slayers.
Yeah.
And then he figures all that out because, well, I guess you never really know, actually, because what ends up happening is the priest shoots Einan, and Einan sees the dragon go down, realizes they're connected, and then goes back to the castle to stop the dragon slayers from killing him, assuming that if the dragon dies, he will die.
Yeah.
But to be honest, like, the way Draco explains it, it only works that if the dragon dies, Einan dies, because Einan can't, Einan can't actually be killed by mortal means, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. Both have to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like, you know, to bring it back to, like, biting your tongue earlier, you know, canker sores, like, every time he's done that, does he feel it? Every paper cut, every, you know, like, does the dragon feel it every time? And is it limited to pain?
Yeah, like, I originally thought that it only has to do with the heart, because feel like she stabs him in the heart, and I don't remember where the arrow hits. But I kind of thought that was the connection, but I could be wrong.
Well, see, I thought, no, she stabbed him in the shoulder, though, because it's also the dragon's shoulder that starts glowing at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, does he feel all of the king's pleasure? Like, if it has something to do with the heart, what if he's, you know, like, what if the prince is a serial masturbator? You know, like, like, Draco would be in his cave being like, fuck, again? How am I supposed to sleep through this shit? You know, like, but, you know, even if it's pain, yeah, to bring it back to canker sores or something, it's like, that would be annoying. Fuck. Everything this guy feels, I have to feel. What a curse.
Yeah, like, if you got even if you got, like, the flu or something, like, then does the dragon get the flu?
Yeah. Yeah, is he blowing fireballs through his cave wall because he's blowing his nose, but it comes out as flaming?
Yeah, I don't know.
So now, I want to say I love the castle and all its secret passages. You know, the queen comes up and rescues Kara from her bedroom dungeon that she's got with the big sliding stone slab and takes her into the sewers with the big stone slab. I want to know, though, how the mechanics of something like that work in 900 BC. Because one thing I couldn't help noticing throughout this movie is they were very wasteful of ropes back then. Because every time they have, like, one of these javelin or catapults or something, they have to chop a fucking rope. How come they haven't figured out some sort of lever where you can, you know, save your rope? No, like, think about it. Every time you shoot off a catapult, you have to tie a new piece of rope, or every time it gets just a little harder to pull down because the rope's getting shorter and shorter and you have to tie it off. But what about these big stone slabs? Those things have to weigh tons. How are they just moving casually in and out of place? I don't buy it.
Yeah, and not even like... Like, it would be one thing if somebody was physically sliding them, but how are they, yeah. like, what mechanism has been engaged to allow them to move independently? Like, there's no electricity.
It's not a supermarket. Like, yeah. they don't have an eye over the door or a mat on the ground. Like, yeah, there's nothing that's operating these. It's not an elevator. And you get the grinding stone on stone, like, sound every time. It's like...
It'd be hilarious if there was just somebody in the corner just, like, turning a crank.
Yeah.
Watching. Yeah. Oh, don't mind me.
Just doing my job, ma'am. Yeah. So, I will say the one special effect in this movie that I just can't endorse, because I think they did a fabulous job with Draco. I was impressed for 1996. I'm like, this is passable. I'm okay with these effects. Except for when they're lying around at night and Bowen decides that he wants to point out the stars to Draco, right? He's trying, you know, he can't possibly pronounce Draco's name. So he has to come up with a name. So he's like, hey, you see those stars up there? And my first thought was, you mean the ones that are little X's instead of stars? Like, they did not look like stars. It's like someone had just gone in with, you know, Microsoft Paint and just put in some X's on the screen. You know, it looked terrible. And then at the end, when, like, he ends up going up to heaven and joining the stars, like, that was even worse. That was even worse.
Yeah, they had that weird, like, star explosion and the effect where, like, they're showing somebody watching and it's like in their eyes.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what is, why? That whole like dragon heaven aspect of this movie was, that also came off a little forced. They were trying to do too much with that.
Yeah. See, I think if they had kept it a little simpler,
that
there would have been,
they needed some sort of, because they also introduced like King Arthur and like the Knights of the Round Table and that, and mm-hmm. Avalon and that aspect. Yep. Everything seems so, like, so broad and, like, too general. They needed some more, like, specific development in the story. Not mm-hmm. just, like, just sometimes it just kept, felt like they were just trying to, like, throw things at the movie to just be like, oh, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Like, look at this.
Hey, we're talking about knights. Who's a famous knight?
I would have been more, like, they don't even really explain anything about Bowen's backstory. Like, mm-hmm. and what, or even what it means to be a knight. And this whole code of honor thing and all this. And, like, clearly there's something going on with the queen and the dragons. Like, what's that all about? And, there's, like, obviously there wasn't enough time, but this movie probably could have used, you know... Well, I mean, there is a series of movies now. Maybe I'll have to watch those and see if they beef up the backstory anymore. But
yeah, somebody knows something. They're just not telling us.
Yeah.
You know, and so maybe those do shed a little more light on it. As the secret. I mean, maybe I have to go read the novelization. Maybe I should have paid closer to attention to all the shit that they changed, because it's like, oh, well, that explains it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I finally did find the novelization on Google, it's written by one of the writers, the Peter, whatever his name is, or Patrick Reed Johnson. It was done by him. So maybe it's like, okay, well, this is the shit they cut out. I turned in a 300-page script, damn it. It was supposed to be a trilogy.
I think it's the second one, A New Beginning. I don't know what, like, I don't really know what it's about, but I do know that the main, like, human protagonist is played by Christopher Masterson.
From Malcolm in the Middle. Yeah, Eric, yeah. Right on. Well, good for him. Yeah. I mean, he never got as much work as his brother, and look how his brother turned out. So, you know.
yeah.
So I've got in my notes here at one point, where did the writer disappear to? Like, all of a sudden, the girl swaps out for Gilbert. Like, where the fuck did he disappear to all of a sudden, right? At one point, he just gave up on following this guy around. But then turns up again in the movie at some point, right? It just, I don't know.
In time for the battle. Yeah, because he's not there when Bowen and Einan have their sweet sword fight in the water.
No. Yeah. No, and I enjoyed that, too. Like, that's the thing. This movie felt like there were two different movies going on.
Mm-hmm.
At times, you know? It's like, I don't know. Like, it makes me want to see if they did a better job in some of the sequels.
Yeah, like, what you kind of want from Bowen and Einan is, like, an Anakin-Obi-Wan situation.
Yeah.
Like, their whole, like, brotherhood falling apart, like, good versus evil, like, one needs to die so the other can live situation, like, that is enough for a compelling movie. You didn't need the Kara story. You don't even really need the, Einan basically is the Darth Vader. They're the Empire. They're just the evil in the world. And... Yeah.
He's rebuilding his Death Star.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You could have had Gilbert just have to shoot an arrow through like a 2-foot by 2-foot hole to set the whole place on fire.
Oh no, no! You need Draco to do one of his snots through there. That's what you need.
You need Gilbert riding Draco.
Yes, yes, that's what you need.
That was also a miss. Why, like, does nobody, like, how is it that Bowen never rides Draco in this movie?
I mean, I liked some of there's, like, the scene where they're walking across the field and they're talking, and that's, you know, one of those, I think you even mentioned that particular scene. That's where they're finding out a little bit about their past. But I like how he's kind of flying beside him, and then, you know, he's kind of walking but flying at the same time. Like, I enjoyed moments like that, too, where it's just they you can tell they definitely had fun with this, like, buddy traveling movie that they had going on.
You know, yeah.
They do have some good talks in this movie, Colin. And I think we need to do a little... I used to like this One Piece theater. Okay, so Colin, I've selected the scene where they're discussing Kara and Bowen suggests that he should eat her. So, you know, this is the playful stuff that I thought was fun in this movie. So, do you want to be Draco or do you want to be Bowen?
Well, I think it's only fair that you give your Sean Connery accent a try here, so.
Oh, boy. I don't think I really have one. Who's... Okay. I'll try.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's the girl? That's so bad.
Aren't I doing Draco?
You're doing Draco. I just wanted to give it the old college try.
Okay.
Who's the girl?
A nuisance. Get rid of her.
Why?
They're trying to placate you with a sacrifice.
Oh, now, whoever gave them that bright idea.
Never mind, just get rid of her.
How?
Eat her.
Oh, please. Yuck.
Aren't we squeamish? You ate Sir Egglemore, hypocrite.
I merely chewed in self-defense, but I never swallowed.
That's what she said.
Oh, yes! I used to like this One Piece theater. Just in case anyone's wondering, I wasn't really trying to do a Sean Connery. There were a couple places where I did a little yes. But I, I didn't even go for it. I didn't have the nerve.
I need to get
the pressure was on. Yeah,
Miss Many Money Bunny. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, while we're on a roll, maybe I should just do a little sponsorship corner.
Yes, yeah, sponsorship corner brought to you by Dragon Scales.
Brought to you by Bowen's Dragon Removal Services. How about that?
There we go.
Yeah, no sponsors this week. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Dragon Extermination Services.
Dragon Busters.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he could paint a symbol on the side of his horse. I mean, he's got gadgets. I wanted to see more of the gadgets. Oh, boy. So we end up with the moment where he ends up going to the one village to save them from a dragon. They're now, like, you know, tits deep into their grift. And he goes to the one village. I like the pig head purse that he gets. You know, it's a thing of nightmares, but I thought that's a creative touch that the prop guy had on this movie. Like, the pig head purse. Or was there something about these guys with pigs that I didn't understand?
I don't know. I kind of...
Like, they're pretty meat-obsessed.
Yeah, I kind of got the sense that they were, like, uncultured savages.
Yeah, okay. And so, of course, this is where Kara shows up to just, like, blow up his fucking spot. Oh, you bitch. You know, she's yelling that he's a scam artist.
Yeah, what does she care? Yeah. And if she wants them to join, like, is that the best way to go about it?
Exactly. But somehow they take her in. I mean, you know, like, A Knight's Tale, they got their girl into the squad in a bit of a different way. Right? Like, she didn't come out yelling that he's a fucking fake. But, in this case, it's like, no. Fuck you. You blew up my spot. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
He should have killed her. You know, I guess when it comes to the woman, my favorite scene was probably when they were throwing vegetables at her and she was covered in mud, because it's just like, good. Good. Shun her. Shun her. Her storyline should not be in this movie. Actually, yeah, no, is. You know, I will say, you know, for 1996, good on them for putting in a pretty solid female character, as much as I didn't think she was necessary in this movie. They do make her kind of badass. The whole double axe fighting is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is, I guess, the positive of it. I do feel like story-wise, she didn't need to be there.
As much. Yeah.
Well, I would say at all, really. Like,
I don't mind her being part of the resistance and learning, you know, him having his little sexual tension moment of teaching her how to use an axe. You know, let me ask you, if, like, you know, Joe Farmer was out there learning how to do the axes, would he have come up behind her in the same way and shown her how to move her hands? I don't think so.
No, he would have just, like, kind of looked at him and been like, that guy's probably going to get killed.
Yeah, you're the first one gone. Yeah.
I mean, he also, like, when they do, after the army is formed and they do go into battle, he like makes the decision to not go after Einan and go save her.
Yeah.
Even though she is pretty well holding her own.
She is. Yeah, she's doing all right. And that's the part of her story that was not necessary, was the love story part of it. And having her as, like, the captured damsel and everything like that, you could have had her part of the story, but not as much.
Like, yeah.
You know, after you kill off her father and she gets furious at her, I'll see, but then that leads to the assassination. Yeah, no, just let her witness the prince's death and then let her be in the village later on. You know, there you go.
I mean, I would have... The only crappy thing is, it's like, Draco has to die for Einan to die.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see Kara get the kill shot on Einan. But because he's basically immortal unless the dragon die, like, or it would have been something of like, maybe you kill the dragon and that makes Einan now mortal, doesn't necessarily kill him, and then she gets the kill shot. Maybe that would have been nice. Like, I just kind of felt like her story doesn't get a good cap.
Yeah. You could have Bowen throw his spear and her fire an arrow at the exact same time. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Overkill that bitch, because he deserves it.
Yeah, or even, like, if it was... If the threat... Because basically it ends, like... In the end, she gets used as, like, the scapegoat to like slow Bowen's hand. But it would have been maybe nice even if he, if after Aynen goes to run at him, if she had something to do with like stopping him or like, you know, getting some good licks in on him at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So the climactic battle is pretty epic. You know, when I look at the fact that it's a $57 million budget and the amount of cutting edge CGI they did, because they also did a lot of, like, I'm not going to say motion capture, but they did try to do a lot of like mimicking Sean Connery with the performance. I don't think he had dots on his face or anything, but
I should hope not.
The amount of CGI that they put into this movie, to think that it's only a $57 million budget, and then to have like these epic, huge battles that they have going on, like there was some cool stuff going on. You have a dragon flying in the middle of it all too. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. And again, like kudos to Kara. I liked that even though Bowen does come to save her, they show like she didn't need to be saved. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. But so, yeah, we get the climactic battle with where Gilbert is like the expert marksman. I like the moment when he was learning the bow and arrow and the one guy is like, do it again. And instead he shoots the mannequin in the nuts.
Balls.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's up there though in his little crow's nest. He's not doing any kill shots, right? Is that what it is? Like the only person he's actually willing to take a kill shot at is the king, right? Like he's just trying to wound everyone else. Cause like, okay, the one guy he shoots in the ass, right? And he makes some quip about it. He made some, you know, like clever little line about it.
Turn the other cheek, brother.
Yeah, that's right. But it doesn't look like he hit him in the cheek. It looks like he hit him in the spine.
Spine.
Like, yeah, that guy's paralyzed now.
Yeah. He's a goner.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, it was weird, too. Like, this, again, was a scene that really mimics Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
It does, yeah.
To me. And in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, they have, like, tons of booby traps set up that they keep triggering to, like, get the... like take down the army, but in this one they only have the one.
Yeah,
like why didn't they do more? I know
think of Return of the Jedi. The Ewoks fucking booby trapped the shit out of their jungle too, like that's what you need in one of these battles. Yeah, you need a few more ditches for horses to fall into and stuff like that.
Yeah
like the bit at the beginning where they're trying to trap the king in because he's burning down their fucking village, and they have this whole choreographed routine where they pull a wagon in front of him and all this sort of shit where they, you know, they corner him. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they have anything like that going? Yeah, they have the one booby trap. It's a cool booby trap, but yeah, just the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, these rebels know how to do booby traps, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they're leaning on the fact that they have a dragon on their side, so maybe they don't.
Yeah.
Maybe that weighs into that, but.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the confident pigs in the straw and stick house, you know. They need to be building that house of bricks. That's a weird metaphor to use, but I'm sticking with it. So finally, Gilbert gets a clean shot at the king, and that's when Draco falls out of the sky, and that's when everyone realizes, oh shit, these two are attached. I like that he kept lifting up his scales, too. I thought that was a neat effect. I don't know why. There was something about him lifting up to show his heart.
Show his scar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's captured. He's chained up. I don't understand why he's not breathing fire at these guys while they're trying to chain him up. Or is he too injured? Maybe he's too injured.
I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. Like, the thing is Aynen gets shot, but is still able to, like, have the... And he gets shot, like, in the chest.
Yeah.
But he's still able to have the recognition that, you know, he needs to get back to the castle. And then run ride his horse full tilt while whipping his horse to get back.
With the arrow he just pulled out of his chest.
To get back, but Draco, who's not even the one who took the wound, is so hurt by this that he's able to be chained down by a bunch of people. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a weird, didn't make much sense to me.
Yeah. Well, another one that didn't make much sense to me is as they're storming the castle and they're coming through like the catacombs in the basement of this castle, there's one point where there's two guards standing outside, you know, like the metal bar door that's there. And they like reach through and it looks like they like squish their faces and then the guards drop to the ground. And I'm like, what damage did they actually inflict? Like, you don't see like a violent like head snapping, like they didn't break their necks or anything. It's like they just, you know, it wasn't even a sleeper hold. I don't know. I just didn't understand what damage they inflicted.
And they didn't have any chloroform or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, in the siege, Kara's killing off everybody. And this, again, is one of those moments where I was asking, you know, what pain does the dragon feel? Because you said heart pain, which makes sense, except the first wound was the shoulder. But when the king gets it in the side of the head with that big fucking rock, like, they don't show Draco reacting.
Well, I was going to say, also, when they have, like, the big fight on that tower, and then Bowen moves and Einan like falls like, I don't know, seemed like three stories through some wood into a sewer, you know, that would kill somebody. But Draco doesn't seem to take that pain. It's like, it seems like he only feels pain if it like pierces, if it's piercing, like if it pierces the skin.
Okay. But that rock was big enough that I'm sure it pierced some skin.
Yeah.
But so we end up getting to the point where it's the moral dilemma of, in order to kill the king, he has to kill the dragon. And I thought that was a great moment. I thought it kind of, the friendship that develops between Draco and Bowen, I think, is great.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes too long to get to the part where they start building up the friendship.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things where I think for their friendship to be solidified is, like, you kind of almost needed Draco to live somehow. Like, I think that I think the story itself kind of paints itself into a weird corner that doesn't leave anything really satisfying at the end of the movie. I'm not really, when this movie is over, I'm not really happy with how anything has transpired. Like, I feel like nobody really gets their due.
Yeah. Yeah, and at the end you're like, well, he's caused an extinction of an animal.
Yeah.
And
like you want Draco to live so that in the next movie, Bowen and Draco can go off and find him, like, some tail to, like, repopulate the dragons.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, there's gotta be one left. Come on. Yeah, you know. You want this to be a Littlest Hobo adventure of them going from town to town for the rest of their, you know, movie careers. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But then, yes, Draco ends up dying and we get the worst effect in the entire movie as he fireworks his way into the stars and all that sort of stuff. And then there we go. The end.
The merciful end.
That is Dragonheart. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 49. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 50% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 60%. Everyone's just basically meh. That seems to be the ratings. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like an arrow to the heart, hit us with some reviews.
All right. Jim W. gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, an underrated movie despite the production coming off made for TV-like. As if all the money was used on the great dragon effects, everything else can look a little cheap. With that said, Sean Connery is fantastic as the voice of the dragon, while David Thewis makes a fine villain that you want to beat the shit out of.
Yep. 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 Yep.
Tom B. says, 1 star. I saw this movie in a dollar theater and still felt ripped off. Even Sean Connery couldn't save this movie.
Oh, boy.
Bo R. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, I remember watching this as a kid and loving it. So I decided to see if it was as good as I remember. And it was totally worth it. Sean Connery is amazing as the lovable and charming Draco. I still cannot watch the finale. I think he just meant to say, I still cannot watch the final scene without crying.
He put finale scene? Is that?
Yeah, he put finale scene.
Okay.
Jake C. gives the movie 3.5 out of 5 stars and says, this is such an integral, inextricable part of my adolescence, having come out when I was 10, the prime age for myths of chivalry, dragons, and 007. To judge the archaic CGI and Quaid's atrocious accent fairly would be as impossible as judging the other half of my heart. An unknown reviewer gave the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, I remember this movie being a lot more magical when it came out. Now it seems rather corny and sentimental, and the dragon CGI has aged very poorly. Still, it's kind of a cool story, a fun enough adventure, and Connery and Quaid play off each other marvelously.
Hmm.
And then, you know, I'll do a critic's review for the last one. We'll go to the man, Roger. Roger Ebert says, Rob Cohen's Dragonheart is one of the most sublimely silly movies I've ever seen. Since it combines its silliness with special effects that are quite simply sublime, I must resist the urge to take easy shots at it.
Nice.
It's very backhanded, but sure.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, it's pretty. So they tried their hardest, so I'm not going to say anything bad about it.
Yeah, but it's
very pretty to look at. Right on. So yeah, all middle of the road kind of ratings on this one. I will say I liked it. I didn't love it. I did like it, and there were certain parts that I liked so much more. Like, it's tough to say because it's like I liked all the Einan stuff for how great David Thewlis did in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought he was a great villain. I don't think he was the right villain for this movie. Like, he was a little too evil for the lightheartedness of the rest of it. I don't know. I mean, it just, I don't even know how to organize my thoughts on this one. It was messy, but I had fun.
Yeah, I think that's the way to describe it. Is like, it's fun. It's a fun, there's a lot of problems, but it's a fun movie for sure.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where I agree with like Roger Ebert actually, like to critique the movie is like that would just, I feel like that would be all, like masturbatory. Like it'd be, it's like not, it doesn't make sense to critique the movie. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've compared it a lot to Game of Thrones, and with my very limited first season, or half of the first season that I have watched of Game of Thrones, I feel like his villain is better placed in something like Game of Thrones, right? And we've also compared it a lot to Robin Hood, but I think I had more fun with Robin Hood because of Alan Rickman, because of the villain, right? Like, I think that Alan Rickman was a good kind of sinister for the tone of the rest of the movie, whereas this one is just like, no, he's in the wrong movie. Like, it's just, yeah, I don't know. That I think that's my problem with it, is I had so much fun with the buddy cop aspect of the movie between the dragon and the scam artist, but I liked the other stuff. I just didn't like it together.
Yeah.
So it's messy, but it's fun. Yeah, I'm going to say I'm still somewhat impressed with the effects, and I enjoyed the movie, but I think meh is a good rating, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah. If you like dragons, go watch this movie. I don't know. If you like Dennis Quaid. If you're the one that's clamoring for the next Dennis Quaid movie and you haven't seen this one, go see it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just rambling now. Colin, what did you think on this view? And you're the one with more of a history.
I mean, I feel like it's probably come across. I did not like this movie as much as I remember liking it, mm-hmm. which is kind of sad because it's a movie that I really had fond memories for. And I do think it's a fun movie, but it's not a movie that you can think too much about.
No.
And it's one of those situations, like, it's kind of one of these situations that happens, like, a lot, I feel like, with movies that are not, like, you know, made by, like, really well-known directors and screenwriters of this era, where it's just, like, I don't know. If you tally the amount of times in our podcast that we say there was a better movie here that I wish we would have got to see, that's how I feel about this one as well.
Yeah.
There's so many things that I think, like, the more I think about it, the reason why Kara's character has to be in this movie is because we don't get a satisfying conclusion or reasoning behind the split of Bowen and Aynin.
Mm.
I draw the Anakin Obi-Wan analogy to them. Like, the way they're presented at the beginning is like it's mentor mentee, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, knight and apprentice. Like, yeah. These guys should be like bonded like brothers, and then there should be some sort of cataclysmic event that like separates them and like causes real pain. But I don't know. You don't really get that. Like, Aynin just kind of becomes an asshole, which he clearly already was. Bowen sees it,
but
doesn't even force him to take any responsibility for it, just blames the dragon, and then goes on his quest to kill all the dragons.
Yeah.
And just kind of, like, leaves and is just like, well, Aynin, just go do whatever you're gonna do. Like, I guess we're done, like... You're not listening to me because this dragon twisted your mind, and so I'm gonna go kill him. And then even at the end, like when he's like, you know, they have their moment where like he's like, well, I taught you about the old ways, and Aynin just tells him like, well, all I wanted to learn from you was to fight, and it's very emotional, but it kind of falls flat again because it just wasn't heightened before. The depth of their relationship is never really built in the movie. Nobody's relationship is really built in this movie.
Yeah.
The closest is Bowen and Draco, and I agree with you. Like, I would have loved this to be a trilogy of, like, Bowen and Draco movies where you would have got to see them kind of, like, grow together and go on different adventures. Like, that's what you want in this movie, I think, is, like, is more of an adventure movie, not a... revenge, like, let's save the townspeople from the evil king.
Rebellion, yeah. I don't know. One last little fact to leave you on, which could make you think of this movie entirely different. The studio wanted Whoopi Goldberg to play Draco.
See, that also leads me to believe, like, with Robin Williams and all, like, it really leads me to believe they must have wanted this movie to be a comedy. Like...
Yeah. Yeah, they needed Alan Rickman as... They needed the Sheriff of Nottingham as the villain in this movie.
Yeah. And I feel... Yeah. I guess at the end of the day, I think this movie... I'm glad to have watched it again, but I definitely don't like it as much as I remembered liking it, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I might be willing to check out one of the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see how the oldest brother from Malcolm in the Middle can do in one. You know, let's go see what the beginning is.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I am interested enough, and I mean, like I said at the beginning, I like me some swords and shields and dragons and fantasy and all that. So I am interested enough to go watch some of the direct to video sequels. I pray they are not as horrible as the Scorpion King direct-to-video sequels, because those are god-awful. But, I mean, how bad can it be when you have Patrick Stewart in one? Like, at least I'll watch that one.
Like I said, Helena Bonham Carter starring... More Harry Potter alum starring in the most recent one.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about this movie I can't let drop, because, like, even you bringing up, like, the swords and shields, and it's like... There were some great fight scenes in this movie.
Oh, yeah. There's some cool set pieces.
It was like a whole bunch of different scenes that didn't seem like they were all quite part of the same movie, but they tried to tie them together somehow. I don't know. Like, it's just, there was a lot of great stuff, but it was just, but it's not a good movie.
It's like a fantasy sketch movie where they just like tied together all the different.
Yeah. What's the common thread that we can have? Let's put a dragon in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, and if you, you know, if you were someone that remembered Holy Grail better, it's kind of like, that's sort of what the Holy Grail is. Mm. But at least it's funny all the way through. Like, at least the tone is still the same all the way through. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm confused. There we go. That's Dragonheart. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people. Spreading word of mouth is the most important thing you can do for a podcast. Like, ratings and reviews are so important as well, but nothing is the same as you going up to someone personally and saying, hey, there's this podcast I like, I think you would like it too. So help us out, spread some word of mouth and help us get more earballs on the show, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. We'd love 5 of them. Or if you want to go one step above and beyond and really help us out, you could go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family. And you become an executive producer, so you get a shout out just like Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, and find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, so that, you know, we'll have more stuff to talk about on this show. Let us know if you want to be on the show, and then maybe you can come join in the fun. And then we won't just have to have Chris come back every other week.
And do a 4-hour recording session.
Do four hour recordings. Just kidding. Love you, Chris.
Yeah. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. To steal a line from Frank, our old friend Frank, it's a short show. If you don't like it, it's over before you know it. So
that's what she said.
Oh! Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.